Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll first go to London and speak with an expert on British extradition law, David Bentley, an Associate Fellow of International Law at Chatham House. We will discuss extradition as it applies to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who has just been granted political asylum by Ecuador and is holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy with the UK police outside waiting to arrest him for extradition to Sweden. Then we'll look into the hysteria over terrorism that was at fever pitch before the London Olympic Games, leading presidential candidate Mitt Romney to criticise alleged deficiencies in security. Dr. John Mueller, who has an article in the latest issue of International Security, The Terrorism Delusion, America's Overwrought Response to September 11, joins us. He is quoted in articles in Foreign Policy and at Salon.com by Glenn Greenwald, debunking sham terrorist experts masquerading as objective scholars, shilling for the terrorism industrial complex. Then finally, we will speak with the inventor of a new light bulb, a revolutionary light bulb that uses minimal energy and will last for generations. Daniel Lang joins us. He just unveiled BrightSol Incorporated's breakthrough technology at Senator Harry Reid's National Clean Energy Summit in Las Vegas with former President Bill Clinton and Interior Secretary Ken Salazar. We'll discuss how his invention, which will be given away for free to developing countries, is expected to save energy and reverse global warming. Let's now go to London. And joining us now is David Bentley, an Associate Fellow of International Law at Chatham House, a London-based independent think tank on international affairs. His expertise includes law relating to terrorism and extradition. Welcome to Background Briefing, David Bentley.
Thank you.
And obviously there's a standoff developing in London now with the Ecuadorian government having granted asylum to the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange, who's been holed up in their embassy in London since June, and the British government's obligations to extradite him to Sweden. Do you see this as being a long impasse, or do you think that something is going to give in the short term?
I find that very difficult to answer, because I have no knowledge whatever of the thinking within the British Foreign Office, or indeed, of course, the Ecuadorian Foreign Ministry. Who knows? But I would obviously like everyone, one would hope, that this will not be a long, drawn-out business, because it's very bad.
Well, already, of course, there's been statements from the Ecuadorians being quite critical of British behaviour and making sort of dark references. Now, on the other hand, there's been also talk on the British side of lifting the embassy's diplomatic status to fulfil what they see as a legal obligation to extradite Julian Assange, using the Diplomatic and Consular Premises Act of 1987. Explain that to us in terms of whether that, how that can be done in terms of revoking the territorial nature of an embassy, and also in the broader context of what we understand as embassies being foreign territory, and an invasion of foreign territory of an embassy is considered an invasion of foreign territory, and under international law, I understand, is causa belli.
I'm afraid that, like so many people, you have misrepresented the law on this situation. An embassy is not, repeat, not foreign territory. An embassy remains the territory of the host country, that is, in this case, the United Kingdom. What it benefits from, as you rightly say, is the immunity granted to it under the Vienna Convention, which means that its premises are, in effect, inviolable. But the corresponding responsibility of the embassy is to behave properly. International law cuts both ways. And an embassy that doesn't behave properly may find itself seriously embarrassed if it then seeks to invoke international law. And this is what is really happening, that the United Kingdom, our foreign secretary, our secretary of state, has the power, as you say, to remove his consent to these premises being used as diplomatic premises. Now, this is obviously not a step to be taken at all lightly. The immunity of diplomats, the inviolability of diplomatic premises, all these things may be highly inconvenient on occasion to the host country when some diplomat runs somebody down in an embassy car, so on, but they're there for a good reason. And if the United Kingdom is threatening or drawing the attention of the Ecuador government to the power that it has to remove this immunity, this inviolability, then it is for very good reason that it can be done.
So did the Diplomatic and Consular Premises Act of 1987, was that in response to the shooting of the British police officer in front of the Libyan embassy?
I think yes. I mean, it came a little while after that, didn't it? But the difficulty with diplomatic law is that while there is the Vienna Convention, which embodies most of the rules, it works to some extent on give and take and common sense and decent behavior. And it can be useful to set things down, if you like, in black and white. And the 1987 Act actually goes well beyond what we are talking about into realms of what you might call good housekeeping. But I agree, this business is not as shocking, obviously, as killing a policewoman in the middle of London, the Libyan embassy business. But the Ecuador authorities are behaving quite wrongly. As you said, there is an obligation on Britain to extradite Assange to Sweden. Both Britain and Sweden are parties to the European Human Rights Convention. Our highest court has held that he should be sent to Sweden. Strasbourg has not granted him any relief, the European Human Rights Court. And so really, Mr. Assange has a very weak case.
Again, I'm speaking with David Bentley, who's an Associate Fellow of International Law at Chatham House, a London-based independent think tank on international affairs. His expertise includes law relating to terrorism and extradition. When you say that the Ecuadorian government has, I'm not quite sure exactly what you said a minute ago, but it's not behaved well, shall we say.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that, and I don't know their motives at all. I can only, go on the outward appearance of what they've done. But they are supposed, as a diplomatic mission, and going back to their own government, to respect the law of the land in which the mission is situated. And this is precisely what has not happened. Assange was out on bail. He'd been granted bail. He was living with friends, supporters. He skipped bail. He went into the embassy. And what the Ecuadorians should have done, because skipping bail is an arrestable offence, is to say, we're very sorry, but, out you go. Instead of which, they swallow, if you like, that's perhaps too strong a word, they accept his story that he's liable to be sent off to the United States if he's extradited to Sweden. They believe that this puts him in peril of his human rights being violated. They appear to ignore the fact that we and Sweden are both bound by the European Human Rights Convention, and they ignore the fact that it is our obligation under our extradition relations with Sweden, where a case is properly made, to extradite the subject. They are not behaving properly at all.
So, David Bentley, surely this opens up a can of worms, though, in terms of perceptions about who is being persecuted and who is not. For example, recently in China, an official tried to defect to the American embassy over the Bo Xilai case that involved the killing of a British businessman. The wife of Bo Xilai, the Politburo member, is on trial and about to be sentenced, I believe, in China. We also have cases of, I believe still to this day, there are people inside the Spanish embassy in Havana who have been living there under the protection of the Spanish embassy from Cuban authorities. So we've had a number of incidents around the world of people escaping from trying to seek refuge in foreign embassies because of the persecution of their governments. And the Ecuadorians are basically saying that Julian Assange is also somebody that's being persecuted. So does this come down to a definition of what persecution is?
We are not China. Sweden is not China. We are not Cuba. Sweden is not Cuba. What we are doing is trying to run a civilized Europe-wide system of law, human rights, and extradition, which Mr. Assange snaps his fingers at.
But surely the consequences of this in terms of reciprocity and in terms of precedent, that's why I brought up the China and the Cuba example, is surely that they can then turn around now next time anybody tries to escape the Cuban or the Chinese authorities and seek haven in a foreign embassy, can't they revoke the embassy's territorial immunity?
I think you'll find that in most of these cases, for example, China, I don't know about Cuba and the Spanish embassy, but in most of these cases, the matter simmers down. Hillary Clinton visits Beijing or whatever, and, the chap ends up in an American university teaching Chinese studies and so on. It doesn't, but the standoff is dealt with. I don't think it is a fair comparison. I think that it is misleading to treat this as in any sense on fours with people who are trying to escape from the grasp of very violent dictatorships. And I agree that there is scope for, if this goes ahead, which who knows, that there's obviously scope for misuse, just as the terrorism laws in this country can be picked up and pointed to by very much, very, very unpleasant regimes and say, well, the British detain people, why shouldn't we? Well, there you are.
Well, we, are, of course, living with the consequences of the George Bush, Dick Cheney use of torture, where every tinpot dictator around the world is able now to say, well, you Americans torture as well. So there are clearly, clearly problems associated with the idea of, holding up a high moral standard.
Well, again, I think, with respect, this is a misleading comparison to the extent that we are not, all we are doing is trying, as I said, to see that the rule of law in Europe, which has its strong human rights protections, is implemented, is respected. And that is a very different matter. What I would say is this, that the South American states do have, and this is perhaps one aspect of it that people haven't raised, they do have a long tradition going back into the 19th century of respecting a notion of political asylum within embassies, diplomatic asylum. And the rest of the world just says, well, that's what the South Americans do. They're a sort of club. But it hasn't really caught on as part of proper international law. The other thing I would say is that granting somebody asylum, and I put that in quotes, outside the country of asylum, in this case Ecuador, is in a way pretty odd. You can, if a fugitive or whatever you call them, applicant, turns up on your doorstep, then you can say, welcome, come in. We won't send you back to your awful country. But I don't see that there is any mileage under international law, certainly not under British law, for countries outside the UK to say, oh, well, this person within your boundaries, your territory, we regard him as having been granted asylum. You can't touch him. That seems a nonsense.
Well, I think what you're saying here, David Bentley, does give rise to question. For example, Julian Assange is an Australian citizen. The Australian government is not going to bat for him, which would be the normal process, one would think, that the country from which the asylum seeker comes from is the one that would be primarily involved. I mean, it's clear, for example, the Australian government weighed in on somebody that was captured in Afghanistan with the Taliban and who was held in Guantanamo by the U.S. authorities, and they weighed in on his behalf and got him out. They're not doing anything similar to Assange. It seems to be that Assange has become a kind of international leper, if you will.
I don't think you've used the term. I don't think you can give yourself leprosy. But I think that Assange has been accused in Sweden of quite serious sexual offences. He chose to come to this country rather than face his accusers, face trial. If we forget about WikiLeaks for a minute, then, you know, here's somebody who is accused of having behaved very badly towards, what is it, one or two women.
Yeah, I think it's called seduction by an Australian.
Well, I wouldn't.
I could say that.
I'm an Australian, so does the other set.
Yeah, well, I'm an Australian, so I feel I can say that, you know. Let's end up, if we can, David Bentley. I'd like to just, in closing, get a sense of what might happen in practical terms here, given this standoff and how it might end. My understanding is that if Julian Assange were to be extradited to or be given asylum in Ecuador, he would be nabbed the minute he left that building. So is that the assumption, that he's going to be holed up in that building until this is resolved?
Well, you tell me what the alternative is. I think that one way or another, he won't get from that building to his seatbelt in whatever the airline is that takes you to Ecuador, without having been arrested on the way. And I think that Ecuador has not behaved well. It has put itself into a position where it is now very difficult, I suppose, to back down. Equally, that there's no good reason, you know, morally or legally, for our foreign secretary to say, all right, dear boy, off you go to Ecuador. I hope you enjoy yourself there.
Well, that's not going to happen, right? That's what you're saying.
I can't believe that it will happen. But I'm not privy to the policy of the Foreign Office and the discussions that are going on. But it seems to me that the sensible thing, really, for Assange to do would to walk out of the embassy with his own solicitor and to make as dignified a way as he can to Heathrow and wait to see whether he can launch any further legal moves. But I honestly don't know.
Well, David Bentley, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with David Bentley, who's an Associate Fellow of International Law at Chatham House, a London-based independent think tank on international affairs. His expertise includes law relating to terrorism and extradition. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about sham terrorist experts.